What's going on, guys? Today, this is a special episode, episode number 10 of Bowler's Grind. I'm your host, Marshall Kennebrew, and today, co-host Kyle Michalowski and myself are celebrating his big win at the past ABT Amateur Bowling Tournament, and just kind of talking about the thoughts that he had along the way, the balls that were working the best for him, and we're also discussing past patterns and current patterns coming up at the Gold Coast practice session. So I hope you guys enjoy.
Hello.
I think we got you here. Hello, hello. Kyle, can you hear me?
Yep.
Good evening, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I hear you're doing very well. The last ABT winner, Kyle Michalowski. Congratulations. Round of applause.
Thank you.
So tell me, Kyle, what does it feel like to win the ABT championship, and what were some of your thoughts along the way? I'm dying to know.
It felt good. Only thing, it was followed up by it was, but after a week of bowling bad at the ABT Nationals, which cost me more than I won, so I was just digging myself out of the hole. So it didn't feel as good as it should have been. But it was good. It was I felt good about how I bowled. The lanes were pretty easy for me, how they were playing. It was a longer pattern, and I was just able to keep it close to the head pin and just continue striking. Some of the lanes were a little tricky, but never got too out of hand. It was a very fun experience. I'm glad I was able to finally get a championship there. I haven't won an ABT, even though I've been bowling them forever.
Would you say this is like up there with your the back-to-back 300s, or what is this one of your biggest accomplishments in bowling?
Oh, no, it's not up there in terms of that stuff. I felt like this was more of like it was there for me, and I just had it, and it didn't feel like it was overcoming anything. I just, everything lined up so that it was kind of felt too easy.
All right, I like that. So, I mean, would you say that, you know, it was about time that you finally landed the win then? Like, does this feel like it's been a long ways coming?
Yeah, definitely felt that way. I was kind of hoping it would be like a bigger one of their events, but turn goes the way it goes, right?
Absolutely. I mean, the closest I've ever been to winning one was when I lost to Bob Godine by 6 pins. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, that was the closest I've been, you know. And sometimes you get tricked into thinking you're going to be there all the time. And granted, maybe I haven't done every single one that they've had out there, but you have to kind of relish in these moments and use them as like a catapulting to your next thing, however it motivates you, and try to not dissect it too much. That's how I look at it, because I'm new at this sport, you know, and I know that there's going to be lows with the highs. You know, I've definitely had my shares of lows, but sometimes I feel like if you don't use these high moments to be like, hell yeah, why did this was successful? Then you might lose that, whatever got you there, you know? So I guess I would have to ask you, what felt different about this time winning it, making it feel it, whatever, for whatever reason it felt easy, than all the other times where maybe you had struggled with, like, what could you pinpoint, if anything?
Just the pattern. The pattern was easier for me, and it matched up to me, and it didn't really change lane to lane. Like some of the other pairs at other tournaments, like I would go from having the whole world to all of a sudden my ball hooks off the planet, and I try to make a move off of it, and I just lose it from there. That happened to me at one of their other events that was for $5,000. I just couldn't. I had the look, I was crushing everyone, and then all of a sudden I get to a pair where it's hooking too much. I move left, trying to just move throw it to that spot that was hooking too much, and it went 100 feet, and I was like, okay. And those are just the things that I got to get better at learning, and I've been slowly working on that stuff each and every event that I've been bowling, trying to focus down on all these things that are my shortcomings and trying to figure out what I need to do to not create those mistakes.
And go ahead.
That's the end of my what I was gonna say.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like that definitely rings a bell when you say limiting your mistakes, because I would say more times than not, like the more you can just limit your mistakes and really just execute what you're good at, all of a sudden the pattern and, you know, the variables, the ball, they seem to not matter as much. So however you may limit your mistakes, whether it's like ironing out the details through practice or whatever your process may be, I think that's something that resonates with everyone.
Yeah. It's just been, obviously spares have been an issue for me. Like I need to get my spare percentages, higher, which I've slowly been doing. And I've been focusing really on trying to understand what good ball motion is and how to avoid running into that situation where I make a move and just lose it all together when I was, in control of the like game before, just because we move pairs, I gotta understand how to handle that and what the best moves are, because I've been making the wrong ones obviously before. ABT, it was a good win and I'm happy with it, and it's on to the next thing basically.
So on to the next thing, you bowled an event after your big win at the ABT ABT event. What was the next thing you bowled? What was it, the next day, or which day did you bowl the PBA non-champs?
So the PBA non-champs was the next weekend. It was on Friday. It was 8 games qualifying, and then top 16 making a match play, and top 30 cash, I think. Yeah. And we were bowling on the 44 feet pattern, and it was, at first I thought it was like, in practice I felt it was easy, so I thought, I never tried moving left in practice, because I was assuming it was like a normal long pattern where if you play inside it'll hook. And so that whole day I was struggling to carry. Luckily, I was making a majority of my spares, but scores were so high that I could not keep up at the pace that I was going. I needed to strike a lot more. I missed 6 makeables in 8 games, so that's 60 pins, and I went minus 140. And I think the cut was 175. So spares were definitely not the problem, and I just needed to strike more that day. And that leads into the PBA member non-member, which I had the practice for the member non-member after the non-champs at around 6 o'clock, and we got done bowling at around 2, so I had a few hours in between. And me and my partner, I was originally just gonna watch him. And then I saw him throw a few shots, and I'm like, I need to try a few things before tomorrow. And so I went over, I threw on my shoes, I pulled out a few urethane balls, because I tried them in practice on the non-champs, but I didn't really like it that much. And so I didn't use them at all during the non-champs. And then I used them in practice. I'm like, oh, I should have used this all day today. And then going in to the member non-member, I was like, okay, I'm gonna try using urethane all day. I put 500 on both my purple hammer and my pitch black. In practice I was like, okay, the pitch black looks better than the purple hammer. The purple hammer is a little too snappy right now. So I started off in the zone. I stayed right with the pitch black and was throwing it there all day, and basically it was there pretty much all day. I had to make a few like small moves and a few hand changes, but I basically played in the same area all day until the last game where I switched to reactive because it was just hooking too much in the front for the pitch black to get down lane to make its correct shape. And so I, which that ended up being my second low of the day. My lowest was my second game, which just it was just one of those games where it kind of got away from me. The moves got away from me, and so it went pretty well for the day. I averaged 224 a game, which is my best performance at a PBA event. Even though scores were high, I was probably about 5 pins a game off the pace that I needed to be in order to compete, because you needed to shoot about you needed to average about 230 as a team to make the cut. The cut was 497. So that's about just shy of 250 a person.
And sorry, you said what ball you were using for this event?
Pitch black all day
Pitch black.
long
Okay.
on the for the member non-member.
Okay.
And I used it all day except for the very last game. I switched to an IQ Tour because I urethane just wasn't in play on that pair. And I felt like I threw it good. Some got away from me, but it was just how the pattern worked. It was kind of the weirdest pattern I've ever seen because it's 44 feet, but it plays like a house shot. And there's so much friction to the right that, like, if you miss right, it hooked back and struck. And I was like, okay. So I just stayed there, and like anytime I missed left, it just went straight. There was even one shot that I missed so bad that it was going left off my hand. And it sat there all the way down the lane and struck on the right side of the pocket. And I'm like, what? And so that was how that pattern was. It just was so forgiving. And that's why scores were so astronomical, because everyone was just scoring. Like the high leaders were two lefties, Eric Forkel and Michael Harder. They were the leaders of qualifying, and they shot plus 700 or something. And they were just down and in, up the gutter. I didn't see what balls they were throwing, but since they're lefties, they probably could throw anything and it looked good.
Now, knowing that the scores were that high in retrospect, would you have tr maybe tried using a more reactive ball, or do you think that you had a good look and that it just didn't work out in your favor this time?
I think with it being within 5 pins of average, obviously I missed 4 spares in this event, so that cost me 40 pins, so that was probably a good amount of them. So if anything, I just needed to throw a few better shots at times, and also I need to get better at seeing the transition for urethane, because urethane is a lot harder to see it just because of how smooth the ball motion is, that it's hard to for me to tell when it's time to make an adjustment on it, or when it's just a bad shot, or if I hit it a little hard, because sometimes it felt like I just maybe hit it a little bit too hard and it just read a little early. And so I feel like I just need to work on some physical stuff to make it a little bit more consistent, and I need to get more adjusted to urethane transition. I
So,
don't use it enough that I see that stuff consistently.
I have to ask you something. And I know we've talked about working with urethane and reactive and the transition and such before, but like, I think knowing what the proper moves are, for me at least, will be like very helpful, because there's some times where, correct me if I'm wrong, where I am using urethane and maybe it's overhooking, overhooking, and I've in the past moved left, but like, Is it crazy to move right and to tighten up your angle because it's smoothed out? Like, I think I found success in that as well. Have you ever tried doing that?
I haven't personally. I probably should, but like for me, a lot of the times when it's doing that, which I could be wrong, but a lot of the times when it's doing that, there's just too much friction in that area that
Right.
I can't get it to lay off. Because a lot of times when I do that, I move right and I go straight through the face, or I go Brooklyn, just because of that. But maybe I'll start giving that a try in some practice sessions or something. I'll get urethane hooking too much and I'll move right on it and see if I can get it to look better.
Well, and I'm not suggesting it, but like for me sometimes, and this is just what I see with my eyes, is that on particular patterns when it's just really overhooking and I try to like create more, even if I'm like my drift isn't there and my walk is straight, for whatever reason, I feel like it just hits the dry so quick and then responds off of it. And I'm trying to like give it room and more oil, but sometimes I wonder if I'd be better off just flattening my hand and going more right. But again, that's just my novice, what I'm seeing. Or should I have a better game plan of moving left and knowing it's time to switch to reactive, you have to move left. Like, but I
Well,
heard that some bowlers move right, and I just haven't developed that concept because everyone always tells me move left, move left, move left.
well, so it's tricky because moving right does make sense sometimes, but sometimes it's stupid and it all depends on the situation.
Give me a
And
prime example of when it would make the most sense.
when like nobody's been playing further right of you in that area, it's all everyone's playing right there. So if you can move right of that and then just be softer with it so it doesn't overreact, or like get flatten out your hand like you're saying. I don't know how much flattening out your hand straightens up your ball reaction, or if it just makes it dead straight. Obviously you don't want it like a spare ball,
Right.
but
Or walking like a tightrope line. That's not what I'm saying, but like some, I just, it's almost like urethane seems great at first. And then if you don't know the proper moves, you are in a world of like, and that's where I don't want to be going forward if I'm going to use it, you know?
And so
I want to.
that's why we got to take advantage of these practice sessions and learn what moves work more often than not for us, because every bowler's different and
Right.
you're always trying to create things for yourself. Obviously, sometimes what you do and what someone else do will be the same, but like for example, I went to watch the finals for the member non-member today, and I saw Eric was bowling the finals, and he was playing straight up where I was playing, and then I saw his partner Cortez Shank left, and he was like towards the middle, and I'm like, I don't know how that he's even playing there because I couldn't get it to do that. And then the guys he was bowling against was Troy Blankenstaff and Matt Zweig, and Troy was kind of where Tez was, and Matt was even further left, and his looked phenomenal, and it looked like he was hitting the left side friction, so his ball would straighten out as it was going left, or is going right, and then it would hit the right side friction and hook correctly, whereas like Tez and Troy looked like they were just too much in the oil. That their ball reaction was just either they get it to the right spot and it made the shape, or it just completely missed it and left awful splits. And that became the whole story of the thing, was that towards the end, Matt and Eric both had solid locked in looks, and Zwie and Troy both had bad looks. And it just came down to who had the worst look, and it ended up being Tez, just because his ball reaction just wasn't consistently giving him a chance, whereas Troy had the extra rev rate to get it to have a chance at mixing or turning the corner correctly when it caught the friction the right way. and Tez just didn't have that shape. But if he was over where Zweig was, I think he would have probably bowled better than everybody, just because in terms of the bowlers, Tez is the most capable bowler to do anything. But obviously, I could be wrong. It could have just been a ball change that made the whole difference. But in terms of what I saw, that's what I thought happened.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating to hear, because I guess I need to watch more bowling, because I don't pay attention enough to the intricacies of what goes on between like a head-to-head competition like that, and the different lines and the different, you know, how you're explaining how some were having good looks and bad looks. Like, sometimes I get so caught up in just to the results, like who struck, who didn't pick up their spares. I'm looking at it like checkers sometimes, and clearly you've developed a higher IQ for the game of bowling. So it's interesting to hear you talk about it like that.
And one thing to take into account, like trying to watch it on a stream or like on YouTube or something, it's really hard to just notice anything, especially like the PBA shows, because they pan from the bowler to where the ball is, to the pins, to like all over the place. So you can't tell what happened or if they made any move or anything, because it's just the cameras are all over the place. And so you're just kind of like, okay, so that's what he did. But if you were there, you could see the moves that he made a little bit better if you're paying close enough attention. Like, obviously, it was a little more obvious on this what they were doing, because everyone was straighter for a little while, and then everyone but Eric jumped inside. And so that's where it made it like pretty obvious, but you could see how much further Matt was compared to Tez and Troy, because Matt's ball was literally, he was lofting it to the edge of the gutter so that he would hit the left side friction, and then it would straight it up, like I said. And then like Tez and Troy were just going straight through the middle to the right friction and hoping that it would hook back. And that some of the time they were trying to keep it close, and some of the time they were shooting for the friction, but it was just kind of wishy-washy. Neither of them really had like a confident look.
So, I mean, honestly, you would consider you bowling ABT, PBA non-championships, and the PBA member non-member as a successful go-around in that, you know, week of bowling, right? Because you're not always going to go out and win every, I mean, what, there was three winners out of the three events that I just named out of thousands of bowlers. So you were one of them, you know, so you have to look at it in perspective of like, did you get better? Do you have things to work on? And was it, you know, did you give it your best in all three? And I think you did. So a round of applause to you. And going forward, what are some things that you got going on in the next week or two?
Thank you. We have the practice tomorrow. They're putting out some new patterns. Last few weeks they had Shark and Cheetah, and this next week, I know one of the patterns, I don't remember what the other pattern was, but the one pattern is the USBC Masters 2021 pattern, which is the pattern I bowled on this year when I bowled the Masters, and that was absolutely the hardest pattern I've ever bowled on. I went minus 600 and something for 15 games. I just could not get my ball to hook. Like, I was playing right, throwing it left, and it still wouldn't hook. I had to hope that it hooked.
So you're saying it's extremely flat, and what would be the ball you'd want? Like what's the ball of attack for tomorrow?
So I'm going to try a few things, because this was, when I bowled it, I had the old layouts, not the 2LS stuff. So I got a feeling that with the 2LS stuff, it'll be a little more open for me, because with the 2LS, the balls shape a little bit better, so that it won't just be me trying to create the shape. The ball will also be trying to create the shape. So I'm hoping that It'll make the pattern a little easier than it was when I bowled. But also, it's at Gold Coast, and I think they put it out after I bowled it there, and it was a lot easier than it was when I was at up in Reno bowling it.
So you said it's 40 feet, 30 mils. That's kind of high on the oil, right? So you should just expect it to be long and flat and keep your angles tight. And the more you move left, you have to have something that's really strong or that has a lot of surface. Is that the game plan in like
Yeah,
a nutshell?
because like the middles hook a lot, kind of like the ABT patterns where they're just super flat in the middle, and they just like if you get it to the middle, you're not gonna have a chance of holding it unless you have an extreme angle on it, and your ball will just overreact and you'll go Brooklyn or split or whatever, even though you're like playing it tight. You have to like either have to play right and get it going in, or you have to play far left and use that hook in the middle as your bumper to try to get your ball to shape into the pins the right way through that flatness.
Okay. So last week I got there, I think around 7. You got there at 6. I if we're going to use the full 3 hours, how would you almost like a coach, because that's I mean, at the end of the day in the game of bowling, the sport of bowling, you either have a coach that you can rely on for mechanical things or mental things, but at the end of the day, it's like going to the gym. You have to be the one that goes and lifts the weight. So if we were structurally planning this out to get the most out of the 3 hour workout, knowing that there's going to be other people there, should we be focusing on the scores? Should we be focusing on conversions of like strike rate, spare rate? What are things you think we should focus on? That way we can start to kind of log things, or maybe not even to share with anyone other than ourselves, and have more of a on paper tracker. Because I know a lot of people like to use the pen pal thing and just counting the scores, but I'm just trying to think outside the box. Are there other things that you and I specifically can be more tailored to as far as what we should be focusing on?
So, like for me, I'm going to start trying to focus on trying to figure out how to be more versatile and how to make those moves. So, I'm going to get lined up and try to strike and try to keep striking and then try to be ahead of the moves as part of my practice. So try to be on top of transition the whole time. That's going to be one of my things, or to figure out what I did wrong in that process to be behind the transition. And then the other thing, obviously, I want to keep on focusing on spares because that helped a lot at the PBA tournaments. My spare game was a lot better, but I think the pattern kind of gave it to me just for how my normal spare problems, it basically eliminated a lot of them because of how the pattern played. So I think I need to definitely focus on that. And the Masters pattern is one of the patterns that does not give it to me.
Okay.
So that'll be a very good practice for spares for me. And then,
So let's create a little goal since we're talking about you real quick. So what is your spare focus at, whether it's how many of them you have to knock down or how high of a percentage? Well, what can we throw out there as
I'm
a
not going
goal?
to go for percentage or anything. I'm just going to try to start throwing. Like, I'm probably just going to focus on that transition thing and then just try to hit the spares. And then I'll probably go into a spare session and just hit the same one and try to repeat how I'm hitting them, because I think that's the big thing, is that my spares have not been consistent how I'm throwing at them. I don't know what exactly it is that's offsetting it, but I need to dial it in so that every time it's going to the same spot, my hand's the same, everything's the same, so that the only variable is the pattern and I can adjust for the pattern. Obviously, the lanes are also a variable, but it's not gonna be that massive compared to like if a pattern's short or long in terms of spare game, because with my spare ball, it's not really that big of a deal. If it was with the reactive, then it would be a big deal.
Okay. Makes sense. So, okay, so here's the list of things that I'm thinking about. So, in the 3 hours, let's say I show up 6 o'clock on the dot, which I probably won't, but let's just assume that I do. There at 6 o'clock. The last time I think I was there till 10:30, so I definitely got my time in. But I want to get in and get out, and maybe get to the gym by 9 or so. That's the plan for tomorrow. So if I'm trying to be efficient tomorrow, in your opinion, in those 3 hours, what are the things that I should be focusing on with this difficult pattern, with my two-handed game? The only thing that I can think of that really helped me last week, and we'll talk about this on the different one, but I liked warming up on the house shot because there was a lot of people on the first few lanes, and I get kind of stagnant waiting around and cold. Sometimes just getting a bunch of those house shot practices in, and I'm glad that they had that there. That allowed me to feel warm, and there's something about me. I don't know if it taps into like baseball world or what, but I perform better when I'm warm. And so yeah, that's just my takeaway. I wanted to go into the house shot, maybe just get warm for like 10, 20 minutes, and then I want to execute the next 2.5 hours, not wasting them, because I really look at this Monday as like a staple in my bowling week, you know. And I don't want to just go through the motions. I actually want to get things accomplished and have goals. So throwing that
So,
out there to you. Go ahead.
I would say this is something that would help you in the future for all events because not always are you going to be able to go and practice on a pair that's a house shot or something before a tournament. Sometimes the tournament's too early and you had to stay up late the lot night before because you were working or something. And you're just going to have to figure out how to get warm before you start bowling. So whether it's like a stretching routine or like you do some jumping jacks and
You want to know what I purchased on Amazon 4 days ago? A jump rope.
there you go. You can do a jump rope right out of the
I don't know if I'll do it at the bowling alley, but
bowling alley.
I have no shame doing it in the parking lot. Okay, I am
All
that
right.
guy.
So do that right before you go bowl and then you'll be warmed up. Because if you can eliminate the variables that could prevent you from being prepared by preparing in a different way, then you'll be all set.
Yeah, that along with just having a better gym routine, and just again, we've talked about this, you know, independently, but like having diet be a heavy focus on not just looking good, but feeling good and having good energy throughout your week. Those are the things that I know I want to focus on outside of the bowling alley. But like, you know, I actually want to, almost like when we had that spare challenge when we wanted to shoot a certain amount in a row, for whatever reason, man, that locked me in, and I was more focused than I've been in a long time in the bowling alley. And I want to recreate that, at least for me. So I'm opening up the challenge to you. If you can't think of anything for me, then I think I'm going to try to hit a certain amount of spares.
Spares.
Yeah. Okay. So, and I think if I hit a certain amount, I think that's good just for conditioning and focus. I want to get them done. I want to, you know, so like, what do you say? 30?
Is that why you want to shoot 30 spares?
I mean, two and a half hours. I think that's how many do you shoot usually in league, right? If you're bowling eight strikes or seven strikes, four, six, you might be shooting four spares a game, right? 12. So I assume they could do that. I think 30 is a fair amount, and we'll see what the number is, but I'm going to count. How about that? I'm going to count every spare that I'm on the sport pattern. So the house shot ones won't count, but once I get on the sport pattern, I want to see how many I can get in from 6:30 till 9 o'clock, and I'm going to make them count, and I'm going to focus on them. And you know, and speaking of versatility, one thing I was caught my mind, I can't give up my backup ball, man. There's something about it that I really love, and I don't know if it what I have to ask you, what would be a pattern in your mind where if you, I don't know how much you trust your backup ball game, but like I feel pretty confident in mine. If what would you say is the best pattern for that on the left side that I could just could see like, oh, everyone's struggling with this. Let me try this out.
So it's not really, it'll be a struggling. It would just be like, so you say you're bowling an event and like game one, you are able to check scores in a majority of the lefties are bowling really good and all the righties are struggling. That would be a situation where that would work. It's just a that's like basically what Simo did. He bowled one game and just didn't see anything on the right side, and he switched lefty for the rest of the tournament and almost made the finals
Is there
bowling backup.
anything that prevents you from doing it? Because every time I've seen you shoot it back up, it's never looked bad. So I've always wondered why. Or do you just are you overly confident in your regular game,
It's
as you
just
should be?
that I feel like in those situations, I'm better off staying with my right side because I need to know how to use my right side, and
Yeah.
I haven't put the time in to understand transition and stuff from the left side, understand where I need to be playing from the left side, and also my backup, even though it's looked good, a lot of the times it's like in the zone where it's going high, so I'm going to be leaving splits because a lot of the times it's like hooking early and just sitting there, and if anything goes a little awry, it's going high.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. I just always curious about it, and especially more now that I've been using the purple hammer over there versus like shiny pearls. I don't know why I was using shiny pearl. That one time I used the team event, I used the shiny pearl on the fresh. I probably that was a worse decision than bowling backup ball, to be honest with you. But you live and you learn. These are things we learn. But as far as this one goes, I think we can shut her down. So last week we bowled at the cheetah. We bowled at the Gold Coast. We bowled on the cheetah pattern. That's what, 33 feet, 27 mils of oil. What was the ball that you found the most successful for you, Kyle?
Pitch black.
Man, so there's something about that ball. I've said it before, and the more and more I bowl, I have all these bowling balls I try. That ball, there's a simplicity to it that if you really trust your hand release and like know how to manipulate it a little bit with your angles, that ball gives you so much smooth control. And I couldn't agree more. Like, maybe not so much on the left. On the left, I need a little bit more back end hook, but that pitch black is just, it eliminates so many problems in your way. And if you can strike with it, you become, I swear, you become so powerful because you understand what's going on in front of you. As long as you can deal with the transitions, you'll be all right. And it makes it harder for other bowlers around you. Like, to me, it just seems like the ultimate, like, that's not fair.
Yeah,
So,
it's a really controlled ball, and that's why it's so good. That's why I don't think the new Purple Hammer is as good as the original Purple Hammer, because the original Purple Hammer was like the pitch black, a lot closer to the pitch black, except for it would create even more angle down, like it would get a little further down lane than the pitch black and go left quicker, but it wouldn't like the new one reads so early that you basically have to be throwing it right immediately, which basically screws up the point of your thing because, like, you don't need a ball that you're shaping the whole lane with. You need it to be calm and mellow, but still shape it the on the down lane, even though your thing hooks in the fronts, which is the misconception. But the thing is, if it hooks too much in the fronts like the new Purple Hammer does, then it's just like impossible to use. Like,
yeah, you know what? Can we talk about this real quick? So we both agree that we both love the pitch black and we both throw it a little bit differently. We have different, releases and velocities. So we can agree that the one of the most popular balls used by most bowlers on tour that we both loved on that pattern is the pitch black. And we both agree that the purple hammer, not dogging it, it just doesn't seem to fit the way it should with all the other balls that we have options with. If we're going to move that far left and try to hook it, having the purple hammer just read early and then dull out in the back, it just doesn't make any sense. So I'd like to, at least from my You have a purple hammer, or were you just using someone's yesterday or last week?
No, I have a purple hammer, but my
Okay.
caveat would be it's the new purple hammer. The old purple hammer was much better ball.
Well, here's my point about tomorrow. Man, can we? I'm down to mess with mine. Can we do something with this ball? Because if we both agree that it is not doing what the old one did, is there a way we can mess with it, the surface, or do something to give it a purpose? Because I don't want to say I don't even want to put it in the bag, but unless
You
I'm using it
try.
off the left side, I'd like for it to be what the old one was. And I'm like, well, have you ever messed with your surface?
No, but you could probably try polishing it or just bringing the surface down to like 4,000 or something. I would start with that probably and then move down to polishing it.
Okay.
Worst case scenario, with your ball speed, polishing it might actually look really good.
Okay. Now, should I do this the homemade polish, or should I take it in somewhere? What would you recommend? Because I just want it done different. Because what I'm seeing every time I go out on different patterns is the exact same thing with that
Yeah,
ball.
that
And
ball is, it consistently does the same thing, but it's unusable in most cases. Like on the pattern tomorrow, it might look good just because it allows you to get further left than you should with urethane, and it'll allow you to throw it right to where like the out of bounds would normally be, but because it's reading before the out of bounds, it'll hook and just and it won't hit, it'll hit the flat part of the pattern and not overreact because it's already done doing everything it's going to do. So that's the only caveat, whereas like on a flat pattern like that, it might be pretty good.
So let's do this then. We both have the new purple hammer, right? Let's polish mine and leave yours alone and then
Okay.
throw them both. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Because then
So how
we
are you going to do
actually
it?
can.
Are you going to hand polish it yourself, or are you going to bring it into the shop right before?
I'll go there, but what time do they close at the Gold Coast?
I think the shop closes around 6, the pro shop, so.
Okay. So I'll try to get there at 5:30. I'll walk in, say, hey, can you give me a polish rag and some stuff? And I want to hand do this up, or I'll have them do it. And then we'll
Yeah,
have
just
two
have
different,
them do it.
okay, we'll have two different
See
purple
how it
hammers at
looks.
two different looks. And then we can literally throw them both on the same pattern and see what that looks like. Because what if the polish looks like crap? All right. And yours looks great. Then you were right. And you'll stay right, which was you think that on that particular pattern, the way the purple hammer set up, it needs to stay how it is. But the way I'm looking at it is like, I would rather this ball look entirely different and be more versatile for more than just the odd end pattern. You know, I want to back. I love urethane so much that I want a plan B or sometimes a plan A to the pitch black. I would love that, and I don't have that right now. And it's literally why I was swinging the hot cell last week. I put that ball in retirement because I bought the purple hammer, and I've just been bringing this purple hammer everywhere, throwing it and then bagging it. And then the hot cell just sits up in the rafters. So, again, that's me messing around with my urethanes. But as far as the cheetah pattern goes, other than the pitch black working for you, was there any other reactive balls that you liked when you moved left or when you had to move left?
No, it's just I just stayed with the pitch black on the cheetah because it just is what I need on that. I don't need it any more reaction than it is, and with it being short, I can't really throw reactive on it. So.
Perfect. All right. So we have a plan for tomorrow. We talked about quite a bit. I'm going to chop this up and it's probably going to go into one. But other than that, I will see you tomorrow at the Gold Coast. We're going to be bowling. Do you want to do it live or how do you want to do it? Because again, I have both my phones. I'm more prepared now. I have two stands. So however you want to set it up for our learning purposes or for people's viewing purposes, I'm fine with it.
However you think works best. Obviously, it all depends on how many people are there or if Edwin got more lanes or not.
Okay, so yeah, for the first couple hours, let's just record and I'll do it on like just on my own shots so I can see what the reaction looks like with the different purple hammers. And then once people clear out, if they do 8:30 whatever, or when I can just be on the lane with just you and I, then that's when I'll go live. I think I feel best about that.
Sounds good.
All right, man. Sounds good. This was quite a bit. Hopefully I can turn two out of this. That'd be cool. If not, then it'll just be like a 30 minute one, but
Did you
sounds
want to
good.
talk more about the stuff we were talking about earlier, or are you all good with it?
As far as just which particular part?
Like the other stuff, like the business stuff and stuff like that.
If you want, we can. Let me stop this. That way it doesn't get messed up, and I'll call you right back. All right, bye.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you guys. If you made it all the way through, this is episode number 10. We are heading into the fall. Guns blazing, you know. Kyle is on fire right now with this tournament and just bowling consistently. And I'm finding that I'm hitting a certain stride in my physical game with the mechanics and things that I've been working on. So hope to have a solid finish to the rest of the year and have a good plan for the rest of next year. So if you guys enjoy this podcast, appreciate you taking the time to listen. And until next time.